Hello, and welcome to The View from Here. This week, I'm in Surrey, looking out over the North Downs by a field of young beef cattle, and I'm with Hugh Broom, who chairs the NFU's beef group. Thanks very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you, Carol.
You farm here. Just tell us about the business that you've got going.
We predominantly farm beef cattle here. We rear dairy calves, Aberdeen Angus Cross dairy calves, predominantly outside, so they're on grass in the summer, and then we use brassicas like kale. They graze outside in the winter, and then we sell them into premium markets.
We're looking out at a field with a herd of young beef cattle. What are the big concerns as you look to the year ahead? Obviously, Brexit is looming.
I think like every business, whether you're farming or not, there's a degree of uncertainty as to what the final deal is going to look like, or if indeed there will be a deal. I hope there will be. In terms of beef, we don't export a vast amount of beef at the moment to other parts of the world. We have some exports into Europe, and a curtailment of that would impact our price. Equally, we import quite a lot of beef from Ireland. So obviously, if that stopped, clearly that would potentially increase our market value here as well and tighten supplies. So we're not self-sufficient in beef in the UK at the moment. The other area, of course, is that if we crashed out of Europe with no deal and we were literally flung onto a world platform devoid of any tariffs or any protection, then clearly that's going to have an impact, and suddenly we'd be exposed to imports from other parts of the world that we've never really had before. Or in the case of, say, South America, there's been quite a lot of protection and tariffs in place so that we don't ever get sort of oversupplied. You know, there's a limited amount of South American beef comes into Europe at the moment, in the same way there is a limited amount of New Zealand lamb. So from the beef perspective, there's obviously concern, there's a great degree of uncertainty. It's probably not as perilous as, for example, lamb, where half of the sheep meat that we produce in this country we export, and a good half of that goes, well, two-thirds of that goes into Europe. So that is quite precarious there. If that market suddenly stops or is in any way disturbed, it will have an impact on prices.
So if there is a no-deal Brexit and imports from Europe suddenly become very expensive, in the short term it could actually be quite good for people like you.
It could, and it could tighten supplies, and as a result, when we've ever had, you know, when we have situations where supplies tighten, then the price goes up. So there may be a short term, or it could be a long term blip. I think equally though, we're keen to do all we can to export. We had the fantastic news this week that we're back on the menu effectively in Japan, and that's taken 23 years to convince the Japanese after the BSE crisis to take our product again. And there's some really good markets in other parts of the world. We, as producers in the UK, we are never going to compete on volume and scale. We are not volume producers like the South Americans, the Australians, the Americans, but we can produce on quality, on provenance, on integrity, and a completely transparent supply chain, and the technology and the data that goes with that to reassure today's consumer.
There is no doubt that big changes are on the way in terms of the way that policy is directed at agriculture, in terms of the subsidies. How are those changes likely to affect you?
That's the biggest. I think that's going to be the big thing. So that's the market. The beef, the red meat sector is very aligned on the support regime that occurs now. CAP money that comes over from Brussels and is then divvied out to all the farmers in the form of acreage payment and other subsidies. The red meat sector, beef and lamb, is probably the most prone. It's probably the least profitable of all the farm sectors. It struggles the hardest. It's hard work. And the cash flow is lumpy because you're having one or two sales every year as opposed to a monthly milk check coming in and things like that. It's very reliant on that, and I think we've still got quite a few small producers that are hanging on, and they're probably hanging on because of the way that support network works. The reality is a lot of those just probably won't bother. They may decide to retire, pack up, go and do something else. So I think there is a lot of change about to happen there. And look, whilst there is opportunity from adversity and vice versa, it's certainly going to change the market, and it's going to change the nature of the business as well.
From what you've heard of what the government is planning, are you likely to be adversely affected by a loss of subsidies?
We've done all we can to diversify our farm income on this farm. One of the things we've done here in the last 12 months with a developer, we've turned our sheep shed into 6 megawatts of battery storage for the power grid, which is something that we were able to do because of where we are. We also run events on the farm, so we do non-farm things to diversify our income. It's something farmers have been doing forever, but obviously clearly there's a more impetus on farmers to do that. In terms of where the government goes with its policy, I think what's essential is it doesn't take its eye off the ball. Whilst we can diversify to a certain degree, we are ultimately here to produce food. And as a result of producing that food, we have the landscape we have the reliable food supply we have in this country, we don't have shortages, and we have the environment that goes with it as well. So it's key that government, and I think government has listened. I mean, as the NFU, we've lobbied, and as individual farmers, I certainly contacted my MP and all that sort of thing. We have lobbied hard to emphasise it's not just as simple as taking that 2.8 billion subsidy a year away. The impact of just literally ripping it away, it won't just be catastrophic for UK's ability to produce food. And we produce about 68% of our own food here now. It will also have impacts on social structure, on socioeconomic things, particularly in more rural areas. Here in Surrey, it's not so bad, but you go to sort of the upland areas, the more rural areas where the economy relies on agriculture, it has other impacts.
One of the other big drivers of government policy is the concern about emissions, about the effect on the environment. We know that beef cattle, other cattle produce a great deal of methane. Do you think you are already facing something of a backlash against this type of farming?
I think you have to look at these things in proportion. If we talk about emissions, whilst we need to do all we can to reduce our emissions and make our businesses as efficient as possible, equally, we need to look at it in the context. You know, we're throwing these macro figures of here's the EU methane load from agriculture, here's the global methane load from agriculture. And actually, when you look at it in context of everything else, as I stand here talking to you, and there's a jetliner flying over me, if you look at the UK aviation methane produced, I can't remember what the figure is, but it's something like it produces in 2 weeks what UK agriculture produces in a year. So we need to get that into context. And whilst absolutely we need to do all we can to reduce our emissions and to be as efficient as we can, we also need to bear in mind that where, for say on this farm, where we've got a grazing system and we winter cattle out, the fields we're stood by now, 5 years ago, were just bare arable fields. There was none of these hedges planted here. There was none of the fencing. There was none of the grassland. And it was actually quite a bare landscape, and there wasn't much going on. When you introduce livestock, you start to diversify the biodiversity. And as such, now we have a greater degree of bird life around here. There's a lot more going on. Where there's muck, there's flies. Where there's flies, there's birds. And on it goes. So if you want a wall-to-wall, barren, arable landscape, take the livestock away by all means. But you will not have the biodiversity you have now. And you won't have the diversity in diet. And I absolutely accept that people want to be vegan and they want to be vegetarian or they want to do whatever. Great, brilliant, bring it on. We grow asparagus on this farm. I grow you vegetables. Agriculture can deliver. But it's about doing it in balance and about doing it in a way that we can do it profitably, sustainably and sensibly in the confines that is the UK landscape.
Are you very aware of that cultural shift wherein what a lot of people are calling veganuary? There are some quite powerful campaigns against the sort of farming which you are pursuing.
Of course we're aware of it, and it's always been there, and I absolutely respect, as I say, people's right to do what they want and what they want to eat. Whilst we have a lot of noise and there's a lot of people jumping up and down about agriculture, emissions, the red meat industry, so on and so forth, we're seeing changes in consumption profiles, but at the moment we're not seeing any drastic drops in terms of those amounts that are consumed. And yes, probably going forward we're going to have to consume less meat as individuals wherever we live in the world. And actually we need to take the stance, and the stance we take here on this farm is we're producing a really good quality product, and if everyone buys into that, then we eat less of a well-produced perfect product. And that's possibly the way forward, but to be able to balance off everything we've got to do. It's not just a simple of take one thing out and then we're all reliant on soya-based vegan processed meals where we've got to ship the soy from the other side of the world. It's not as simple as that.
Have you faced personal hostility for being a beef farmer?
I haven't, no. And I've had debates with people, I've had discussions with people about it. Thankfully, I haven't faced any personal hostility for doing it, no.
There are big changes underway for the farming community. You've got a very high-profile Secretary of State in Michael Gove. Do you think that the government does understand the concerns and the challenges faced by you and others trying to make a living in rural communities?
I think they do, and I think the guys at DEFRA, the civil servants, we've seen like 1,200 new DEFRA people put on since Brexit. They're working as hard as they can to understand. And I suppose in some ways, when we were still in the EU scenario, they were effectively sort of policy morphers. You know, they took EU policy, either gold-plated it or added a bit of GB to it and then pushed it out there. Whereas suddenly it's a bit of a wake-up moment there. And actually, it's a fantastic opportunity to completely redefine our food supply chain, to redefine how we look after our environment and all the things that go with that, that will suit the UK and not be some pan-European policy interpreted by member states. Michael Gove as an individual, I give credit to the guy, he will say what everyone's been thinking, but they're too afraid to say it. And I think from that point of view, it's really good, and it's kicked debates on, it's kicked a lot of issues on. The downside is we've probably had more consultations, more calls for evidence than we've ever had. But hey, the industry's busy feeding into those. And if at the end of it, we can get a really good long-term policy, there's an industry waiting, as in agriculture, to deliver that. And that's not just delivering it on food supply, it's delivering it on biodiversity, on protecting the environment, on enhancing our renewables ability in terms of energy. There is a whole raft of stuff we can do as an industry, as rural land managers, to benefit UK economy. You just need to give us the tools and the impetus to do it.
Hugh Broome, thank you very much indeed for talking to me.